Chapter 5. A Fair Farewell. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13, New King James Version. After I'd been playing at Normandy and Lakeshore for a while, it came time for me to start playing for a school. There was only one that interested me: Jacksonville Trinity Christian Academy. I was the third in our family to play sports at Trinity Christian. Since we were all homeschooled, we needed a way and a place to participate in sports, and Trinity had provided that and had been a good home for us for years. As if the three of us playing wasn't enough, for years my dad had been videotaping every one of Trinity's games for the coach's use, so it really was a family legacy that we were building at Trinity. And we continued to build it when I, as the third Tebow boy, began playing quarterback on Trinity's JV football team in the eighth grade. We were undefeated during my eighth grade year, and I was called up to the varsity team at the end of that season. The varsity season lasts longer. I didn't play at all that year on the varsity, however, but was biding my time for the ninth grade. After the season ended, I continued to train and lift as much as I could, but it wasn't until I was preparing for my freshman year season at Trinity that I realized how much progress I'd been making. Before going into ninth grade, I went to a youth camp that featured, among other events, an arm wrestling competition. Robbie was back from college and had gone along to serve as a counselor for the camp, while Peter and I were there as campers. That competition was one of the moments when I realized that all of my extra hard work was beginning to pay off, providing me with an advantage I hadn't planned for. It was no surprise that Robbie, as a college football player, made the finals at a high school camp. But someone about to be a freshman? I certainly didn't expect to make it. Sure enough, though, I found myself in the finals against my brother. Of all people, my big brother. The finals of the arm wrestling competition? Me, about to be a freshman in high school, against my brother Robbie, a college football player and 6 years older than me. Funny, I just can't remember who won. It was apparent, though, that all the additional training I'd been doing was having a real and noticeable impact on my strength. Seeing that progress and the results of it in different settings made me even more motivated to work hard. Heading into that first year of high school football, we went on a church-planned weekend called the Burly Man Retreat in Hilliard, Florida, located about 30 minutes north of Jacksonville and just inside the Florida-Georgia border. The events of that weekend have become the stuff of family legend and probably illustrate as well as anything just how competitive I am. But there can also be a downside to that competitiveness. This retreat included adult men as well as students, and offered a tug-of-war, wood chopping, and a number of other events. I'm guessing the church didn't even bother to try and get insurance to cover anybody, or the church for that weekend. What insurance company would want to underwrite such events? Anyway, at the end of the night on Saturday, they had scheduled an arm curl competition. As I recall, it was a 15-pound curl bar with two 10-pound weights on each end, weighing in at 55 pounds. I kept sliding back in the line as guys were taking their turns, because I was hoping to be the last one to go, in order to know the number to beat. The number of repetitions that guys were doing kept climbing with each new guy. 35, 40, 50. I think it was around 55 repetitions by the time it reached the guy who was next to last. Me. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to slide all the way to the end of the line, so I was going to have to put up a number that the guy behind me, the last guy in the competition, couldn't beat. Better yet, I figured that I'd put up a number that he wouldn't want to beat, and that way beat him before he even got started. And so I began curling the bar as fast as I could. thankfully, form didn't matter, just raising the bar to your chest by whatever means necessary. Arching my back, jumping, whatever it took. 40, 50, 60, and now I was the leader. I kept going, straight through 100, which seemed like a lot, but I wasn't sure. He was really big, the guy behind me, that is. At 175, my arms were really hurting, but by 225 reps, the pain was pretty much gone and numbness had set in. May as well keep going, I remember thinking. I couldn't feel anything anyway and still seemed to have the stamina and energy to go on. I put down the bar after 315 curls. I won. If winning had included being able to straighten my arms out afterward, I would have been disqualified. I had to pack that night to leave camp the next day with both arms bent stiff at right angles. And when we arrived at church the next morning, I still couldn't straighten them. My biceps were still almost fully contracted from what I had subjected them to in that contest. By the third day, the lactic acid and muscle shock had finally worn off, and I could use my arms again. By the time I was preparing for my freshman football season at Trinity, my strength began to show itself more clearly on the field as well. When I attended the BMW camp in Ocala, BMW stands for the last names of former Gator quarterbacks Kerwin Bell, Shane Matthews, and Danny Werfel, who ran the camp, I was named the top quarterback at the camp, even though I was still only an eighth grader competing with high schoolers. I also had a chance to work out with Gannon Shepherd, my future brother-in-law. At the time, Gannon played for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Katie, an intern for the Jaguars, chose to quit her job and date Gannon, rather than conform to their no fraternization clause. The first time she brought him home, I was amazed at his size. He was a defensive end at Duke and became an offensive tackle in the pros, backing up the great Tony Boselli. At 6'8" tall and 320 pounds, he was huge. While my parents and the other kids were inside with Katie, I was outside with Gannon, working on pass rush moves. Between my success at BMW, my strength victories, and the year as the Trinity JV quarterback that I had under my belt, I went into my freshman year with a lot of confidence. Peter was entering his senior year, and I felt comfortable on the team, with the program, and with our family's history at the school. But then all that changed. As the season got underway, Coach Verlin Dormany insisted on moving me from quarterback to linebacker, despite the success I'd had at quarterback in the eighth grade. Now, to be clear, this was not the first time I'd had to face this concept. I get it. I always did. I understood where they were coming from. I was a big, strong, athletic kid, and I had an advantage over many of the other kids my age because of it. Coaches would therefore always project me to play somewhere else besides quarterback. They all seemed to have a particular body type and lack of athleticism in mind that they associated with that of a quarterback, and therefore always looked for another position that better fit their stereotype of my body type. Just because I understood this, however, didn't mean I liked it. I always wanted the ball in my hands. I still do. My very first experience with the playing position by body stereotype, philosophy, and approach to the game was in my first year of playing peewee football at Lakeshore. They asked where we'd all like to play, and I, of course, answered quarterback. So they put me at running back. I didn't get it. And I didn't like it. And so they placed someone else at quarterback and me at running back for one game, and then decided to give me a shot and switched us. I was excited for the opportunity and was determined to do everything within my power to demonstrate that they made the right decision. I played there for the rest of the year, and then the following year, they moved me to running back for the next 2 years. I hadn't done anything wrong, I was told, but the second year, the coach's son played quarterback. I lived with that decision for those years in Pee Wee football, but it wasn't very much fun. My family, though disappointed, supported me and the coach's decision, something that helped especially during those times where I really wanted to get in there and start taking snaps again. I hung with it to be a team player, but I was chomping at the bit to play quarterback. Football was my favorite sport, but what made it fun for me was playing quarterback. Finally, I got to play quarterback again in my fourth year of Pop Warner, and we made it to the championship. The next year before the start of the Pee Wee League at Lakeshore, my coach came over to the house to talk with my dad. He had some thoughts about where I should be playing. "I'm thinking of playing Timmy at fullback," coach said. "Oh, okay," dad replied. "I'm thinking about having Timmy play for another team." He was clear and firm. Apparently, coach agreed with dad that I was the best quarterback on the team, but he, like the others, was always looking for a position that better matched his idea for my body type and athleticism. When dad told him that I really wasn't interested in playing football at another position, coach agreed and moved me back to quarterback. So, here we were again, only this time it wasn't Pee Wee football. It was Coach Dorminey at Trinity, and he didn't want me at fullback. He wanted me at linebacker like my two older brothers. It was merely the latest addition in this long-running soap opera that always had the same dialogue. Tim wants to play quarterback. He's too athletic to be a quarterback. Position by body stereotype. For that ninth grade year, though, I stuck with it so I could play with Peter during his final season. It was Peter's time to shine, but it wasn't much fun. Some guys just have a nose for the ball on defense. Not me. On defense, I just wanted to hit somebody. But in all things, we can find some good. Even though it was frustrating, I did, even in that latest move. As I was struggling with the move to defense, I was continuing to work out and get stronger. By that time, too, Robbie was in his junior year of football in college, and he started sending me his Carson Newman College workout books and regimen that the team used. Of course, I always felt that I had to do more repetitions than each exercise called for, and I often added to the suggested workouts with additional running or extra exercises or more sets of those recommended exercises. Taken just as it was from Robbie's college, it was a solid workout schedule. For me, it was a great starting point. In addition to Robbie's workout, I learned an exercise series called 10-10-E, which I used thereafter until I got to college. For your final set, you'd put about 2/3 of your maximum weight total on the bar and then do 10 reps. After a short break of about a minute, you do 10 more. Another short break, and then do as many repetitions until complete exhaustion. That is, you can't move it anymore. That number should be between 5 and 8. If you could do more reps than that, you are supposed to increase the weight for the next time around. I didn't realize or ever give much thought to the fact that the body needs a rest period to effectively increase muscle. So for those first few years, I made sure I worked out every day. My dad tried to tell me to alternate upper body and lower body exercises to give my body a rest, but I'm not sure I always heard him. After all, if 4 workouts a week were good, and the number usually recommended, then 7 a week would be much better, right? Eventually, I learned a better approach that would help me to get even stronger and more physically fit. I also studied a number of different books to help with my exercise routines. My best friend since I was little has been Kevin Albers. From the time we moved to Jacksonville from the Philippines, I was always hanging out with Kevin, playing with him at Lakeshore and being with him in Sunday school. In fact, the Albers' house was one of the few that I was allowed to go to without my parents. His dad, Gary, who trained to be a Navy SEAL, gave me my first book on weightlifting, and I immediately started putting the exercises and principles in that book to use on a daily basis. A number of times when I would go over to hang out with Kevin, Mr. Albers would suggest some new exercise or some variation on one I was already doing for me to try. And then there were always the Navy SEAL moments that Kevin and I had with him, which made my time there working out and learning even more fun. He would often say something like, "Grab my shoulder," and the next thing I knew, he'd have thrown me to the floor. He was always teaching Kevin and me various hand-to-hand combat maneuvers that he had learned and polished during his time in the SEAL training. Along the way, I also tried other exercise regimens too. I would add various items from each of these books or from research I was doing on a regular basis on the internet, but the core exercise protocol remained the one that Robbie provided early on, one that he also used from Carson Newman College and Mr. Albers' physical training manual and additional Navy SEAL techniques. I also added exercises from Rocky IV. In addition to all the training, I'd also been drinking protein shakes in conjunction with my workouts, something that had begun when I was in eighth grade, thanks to homeschool. The reason I had homeschool to thank was that for months I'd been trying desperately to convince my parents to allow me to use the protein shakes, and for months they'd been resisting. That is, until my mom suggested that I do a homeschool project to prove to them that the protein mixtures were safe. My parents' hesitation came from the fact that they didn't want us taking anything that wasn't simply from a natural food supply or some kind of appropriate and generally recognized vitamin. I persisted because I kept hearing about guys mixing protein powder with milk or water and drinking it before or after their workouts. The protein in muscles needs amino acids to regenerate, so I was interested in drinking these shakes high in protein to supplement the protein in my diet that my muscles needed to heal and grow. My goal was to let the science out there persuade my parents that additional supplements of protein in my workouts, protein shakes in particular, were safe for me to use. All this created a perfect atmosphere for learning, for all of us. Because of my homeschooling, my mom gave all of us the latitude to study the things that interested us beyond the required course load we had each year. At this time, I was particularly fascinated by whatever might help me improve athletically, and so we turned the building of muscle and protein's role in that into a science project, with an emphasis on any dangers or side effects from supplements and activities that would stimulate or affect the building of muscle. For weeks, I did a lot of research in books, magazines, on the internet, and at the nearby GNC store, putting together what I believed was a well-thought-out and articulated presentation. After all, my athletic preparation was riding on it. In addition, I figured, why not go ahead and try to win the local middle school science fair while I was at it? I tested my output of energy through a given workout and how much protein it would take to generate that energy. I even calculated how much protein I could take in through diet alone, and I was able to show that supplementation was necessary to get enough protein. When I was done with my project, I presented it to my parents. Any grade I might receive was secondary to what I really hoped to achieve with this project and all the research that went into it. It worked. It really was a killer presentation, showing them that the protein shakes from GNC and similar places were completely safe, and I had the science to prove it. From that point forward, I was able to use protein along with my working out. And yes, I won first place in the science fair. The protein shakes, though, were just the start. I paid a lot of attention to what went into my body, and around this time, I also decided to give up soft drinks for a year. My parents had witnessed over and over how committed I was to taking care of and improving my health, and so, on this subject, they had decided to challenge me. talking with me about and demonstrating to me through their own research concerns about the detrimental effects of ingesting too many carbonated drinks. As an enticement to quit, they offered me $100 if I went without having one soft drink for a full year. I did it. I should have held out for more money, but in the end, it was worth it. To this day, I still don't drink soft drinks. While watching my diet and working out in the right way helped me train, much of my early strength came from working on the farm. Some days it was just for an hour before we'd begin schooling. Other days it might be all day, especially if there was a particular project on the farm that needed our immediate attention. We put up fences, chased and herded cows back to where they should be, planted gardens, felled and cleared trees that were dead, or to create some clearings we needed for other things, chopped firewood, and did whatever other work that needed doing on the farm. We joked that we were getting ready to dial child services when the work got too tough. And, as if there wasn't enough for us to do on our farm, about 6 times a year or so, Dad would loan us out to a neighbor friend, Mr. Bell, to help with whatever needed doing in raising and caring for his chickens. If you thought that I was complaining about working on our farm, trust me, I wasn't. Chicken farming was brutal. Mr. Bell had 100,000 chickens. Upon arrival, each time Dad sent us over, we'd immediately begin putting the new biddies, young hens, into his chicken houses, while also removing any dead biddies and chickens that happened to be in those houses. He had 4 chicken houses, and it was common for us to easily fill up 3 good-sized buckets with dead chickens from just a single house. But the fun was just getting started. We would then take the dead biddies to Mr. Bell's composter, where we alternated layers of chicken manure, which we had shoveled up from the chicken houses, and the dead chickens we had also just gathered up from the hen houses. The job? The smell as the chickens cooked after being mixed in with the fresh chicken manure would be a shoo-in for that Dirty Jobs television show. It was horrible. Farmer Strong on so many levels. On occasion, we'd need to empty the composter when it got ripe and ready, which, as you can imagine, could get full fairly quickly on a chicken farm with 100,000 chickens. This process happened shovelful by shovelful through a door at the bottom of the composter, loading the end product of fertilizer into a trailer. We would then drive the trailer to our property and begin scooping it out, throwing and spreading it evenly onto the garden or pasture as someone slowly drove the trailer along. How many times was the wind blowing in the wrong direction as we threw this concoction onto the garden plots? Every time. It never failed that it ended up all over us, in our mouths, on our clothes, and in our eyes, hair, and ears. It probably doesn't have to be said that Mom would never let us in the house when we returned, but instead forced us to strip and shower outside. Looking back, I don't know if it's funnier that we only got $5 for working all day, or that I thought it was worth so much more when I was young. Funnier still may have been the days when Mr. Bell would drive us to Burger King as an additional treat afterward, and before we'd had our outdoor shower. It must have been painful for other patrons and the Burger King manager and employees, not a treat for them, to be sure. In the end, though, being Farmer Strong, being trained, taking care of my body, it all felt like it would be futile if I couldn't play quarterback, despite the fact that I kept improving and had good practices when I was allowed to play at quarterback. The coaches still used a different starting quarterback. That was how my freshman fall at Trinity went, and as the season came to a close, my future as a Trinity quarterback didn't look very bright. I continued to play hard and did what I was told at linebacker and tight end, while my dad kept filming each game every Friday night, dutifully making copies and delivering them to Coach Dormany. But even with that loyalty, we were all beginning to see that something needed to change. Between football, homeschooling, and farm labor that freshman year, I kept pretty busy. And when I wasn't doing any of those things, I was busy at our church. My family attends First Baptist Church of Jacksonville, and I was involved in their plays and youth meetings and activities whenever and as much as possible. Every Sunday morning we were all there, and the other times were a bit more sporadic, weaving things in with the pretty regular schedule of sports, which was often easier said than done. First Baptist always had a great kids' musical, directed by Miss Nancy, who has supported me through my acting and football careers. I would never try out for special parts in the Christmas musicals because of football, but I had some memorable roles in the summer ones. My first role, however, did not exactly portend greatness on stage. I was in second grade and was cast as the back end of the camel. Please, no comments. The next few years, I played some front-end roles, but I only had action parts, never ones that required speaking. That would come later. In third grade, I was a sailor, a Supreme Court justice in fourth grade, and in fifth grade, I was chosen to play Superman. It was a fun action part with a great costume, but I had such a dilemma when I realized that the required dress rehearsal was the same time as the semifinals for the city baseball championship. My mom and I prayed, Dad was in the Philippines, and my team won without me. That meant, however, that the championship game was the same time as my musical. We prayed again. To their credit, my coaches made an appeal to the city, and the final game was changed to Monday. I learned a lesson about giving the Lord my burdens, and this was a huge burden to me at the time. With no game on Sunday, some of my teammates came to the musical, and we won the city championship on Monday. My final action part in a children's musical was the first summer after I started college. I returned home to play Goliath and had a ball with all the kids. With football season behind me, I moved on to the other sports I played for Trinity, basketball and baseball, both of which had rigorous schedules. In basketball, it seemed that my strength helped me to level the playing field a bit, balancing my basketball abilities and performance against my young age. When we played against Hawthorne High, just outside of Gainesville, I faced Cornelius Ingram, even at that time a great football and basketball player who was taller than I was and 2 years older. He went on to play both sports at the University of Florida. When we played Jacksonville Country Day, their lineup included a 7-footer. It was obvious each time out that I needed to find something else that would give me a bit of an advantage, a balance against taller as well as older and more experienced players. On both of those occasions, I was the one assigned to guard the tall guys. I was able to more or less hold my own due to my strength and by playing physically. It wasn't pretty, however. Baseball was still in the sports mix as well. In fact, it was probably my best sport, and the one that seemed to come to me most naturally. I had played varsity since the 7th grade. We even played some golf on occasion, but we did it on the cheap. It was not one of those sports that at the time fit into a missionary's salary. So Dad let us take the weed whacker out into the pasture and create our own putting greens, and then we used the post hole digger to create the cups. We were able to create 4 holes on our own farm this way. One of them was even a water hole over the pond, and messed around with playing a few holes whenever we could. As much as I enjoyed playing sports for Trinity, though, my parents and I were still troubled with the quarterback situation at the school. And so, we came to the conclusion that the time had come for us to look for other schools where I could play football. It was disappointing for all of us in the Tebow family. Trinity had always had great talent. More important, I had played with Peter, and our football team was on a run that culminated with our being crowned as state champions, the first time in school history. Peter had a great year and a great experience at Trinity and was named Best Defensive Player for the year. But as a family, we came to a place where we knew we had to figure out a different plan for my future. We weren't going to say a word about our leaving during the season, but once the decision was made, our search began in all seriousness to find the best environment for me to fully develop my passion and what seemed then to be talent for playing quarterback. No one in the Tebow family was pleased about reaching the end of the trail they had been running, walking, and filming at Jacksonville Trinity Christian Academy. It was a disappointment to us all, but somehow, we all knew it was the right thing to do.